So imagine you hire a new assistant
Right.
on Monday. They help you draft an email, you review it, maybe tweak a sentence, and you hit send.
Pretty standard stuff.
Yeah,
Cool.
completely normal. But then by Friday, that exact same assistant is suddenly communicating with your vendors, making these huge judgment calls on your budget allocations and like signing multi-year contracts on your behalf.
Without even asking you.
Right, without even asking. I mean, what happens to your job and your responsibilities when the tools you use just suddenly start thinking and deciding and acting entirely on their own?
It's a massive shift.
It is. And it's a question you absolutely have to ask yourself right now because, well, we are crossing that threshold as we speak. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are jumping into a fascinating and honestly pretty urgent body of work today.
We really are.
Yeah, we're looking at the AI plus Creative Growth Lab.
Which I should add is particularly relevant because these materials were just updated in August 2026. So we're not looking at speculative theory from, the early days of large language models.
Right, like the old stuff.
Exactly. This is a live operating framework. It was designed by enterprise transformation leader Richard Liquizio, and it's built for exactly the chaos and the complexity that we're dealing with right this second in modern workplaces.
And the mission for this deep dive is to basically unpack this framework so you, the listener, can stop focusing purely on machine efficiency, just trying to get things done a little faster.
Which is what everyone is doing right now.
Exactly. Instead, we're looking at how to shift that focus to what Liquizio calls human growth. It's this fundamental pivot from merely surviving the AI revolution to actively governing it.
Yeah, and there's a foundational quote here that I think sets up the entire paradigm. It goes, AI changed the speed of work, now change the altitude of yours.
Change the altitude of yours. I love that.
It's powerful, right? Because it forces you to rethink your entire value proposition as a professional. I mean, for the last few years, the obsession has just been entirely about automation. Like, how many tasks can we hand off?
How fast can the machine generate this weekly report, right?
Yeah, right. Or write this block of code. The assumption has always been that automation is the end game. But the reality is, automating tasks and just walking away is a recipe for irrelevance.
Right, because when the system you're working with can operate autonomously, human leadership has to become something, I mean, something entirely different.
Completely different.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics of what changing altitude actually means. The framework breaks this down into four core transformations, and I want to start by looking at the first two, which are capacity and altitude.
The foundational ones.
Right. So on the capacity front, the shift is moving from faster work to protected attention. And there's this specific rule here that really caught my eye. It says that release capacity is not growth until it is deliberately reinvested.
That is such a crucial point.
It really is. You have to measure the work you've retired and explicitly declare where that freed up capacity is going to go.
Yeah, so let's think about the physics of an organization for a second. When you introduce a highly efficient tool, it clears your plate. It basically creates a void. But if you don't deliberately choose how to reinvest that newly freed up time, you haven't actually grown your capabilities or your value. You just created a vacuum. And as we know, organizational vacuums never stay empty for long.
I hear that, but I kind of play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
So, if I finish my core deliverables 3 hours early on a Tuesday, right? Because my AI agent did all the heavy lifting, pulling data, drafting memos, whatever,
Yeah.
isn't that just an automatic win for me?
Well,
Like, why do I need to explicitly declare to the universe where I'm reinvesting it? Can't I just take a well-deserved nap or, finally leave the office at 3 p.m.?
I mean, in a perfect world, maybe you could.
Right.
But organizations are living systems that abhor idle capacity. If you don't deliberately claim and redirect those 3 hours, the system around you will just absorb it with more low-value friction.
Oh, the friction. So true.
Yeah, so you won't get a nap. You'll just suddenly find yourself invited to like three more useless alignment meetings, or you'll get 50 more emails to answer just because people know you respond quickly.
Right.
There's a core non-negotiable rule here. It says, do not automate the work and leave the human system unchanged.
Oh, wow. Do not automate the work and leave the human system unchanged. So if I just speed up the machine, but I leave my own routines, my own boundaries, my own goals exactly the same, I'm not actually elevating my work.
No, you're just processing the mundane at a higher velocity. You basically become a faster hamster on the exact same
A
wheel.
faster hamster. That is, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Which brings us to the second transformation, which is altitude. moving from competent output to stronger judgment.
Yes.
The idea here is that human value moves into framing, context, connection, and consequence. So going back to my Tuesday example, I need to consciously claim that freed up 3 hours for high-level strategy, deep thinking, or, you know, building relationships.
Correct, because the competent output is no longer your primary contribution. The machine does the competent output now.
Right, the machine writes the memo, the machine builds the spreadsheet.
Exactly. Your value has to move to stronger judgment. It's deciding whether we even need the spreadsheet in the first place, or understanding the political consequences of sending that memo to a specific department.
Right, the context.
Yeah. If you don't claim the capacity to do that higher level work, your value in the system just stagnates, even if your raw output has tripled.
So if we have to fundamentally rethink our own altitude to focus on judgment and context, that kind of completely blows up how we manage projects and teams, right?
Absolutely.
Like, you can't just hand off a spec sheet and a timeline anymore. And this leads right into some of the newest material from August 2026, titled The AI Project Manager's New Mandate.
Which is fascinating.
It is. The big pivot here is moving from merely managing delivery to governing what are called adaptive systems.
Right. And it requires a completely different mental model. There's this active research question in the framework, series 06, that asks, what must project leadership become when the system being delivered can learn, decide, and act?
Let's break that down, because traditional project management is basically about getting a static piece of software from point A to point B.
Right.
You build an application, you test it, you launch it, and it just stays exactly the same until a human developer manually pushes an update. But now, it sounds like delivering an AI project is less like deploying software and more like, I don't know, hiring a new employee who's constantly changing their mind and learning on the job.
Honestly, I'd take that analogy even further.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's not just a new employee. It's an employee whose brain chemistry alters every single time they read a new document.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot to manage.
Right. Because traditional software is deterministic. Like, if you input X, the code dictates that it will output Y. Every single time.
It's totally predictable.
Completely. But when you deploy an autonomous AI system, it's probabilistic and it's adaptive. It learns from new data in its environment. It alters its decision-making pathways. And it can take actions based on conditions that didn't even exist when you launched it.
Okay. So code does what it's told, but an adaptive system does what it thinks is best, based on its ongoing training.
Precisely. Which means the traditional project management milestone of, you know, launch day, that's no longer the finish line.
It's the starting line.
It is the moment the system begins to mutate. And this is exactly why the new frontier for project managers involves concepts like portfolio authority, post-deployment controls, and simulation-based development.
Okay, let's unpack those terms because they sound a bit dense.
Okay.
Let's start with post-deployment controls. What does that actually look like for someone managing a team?
So think of it like setting boundaries on a living organism rather than building a clock. If you build a clock, you just watch the hands tick. But with an adaptive AI, you need runtime control. You have to actively monitor its learning pathways over, say, the first 100 days.
You can't just set it and forget it.
Not at all. You have to set up guardrails so that as it learns, it doesn't drift into behavior that violates your company's risk policies. You're basically moving from a mindset of, did we deliver the code on time, to operating a system of ongoing value, evidence, and authority.
Okay, but governing an adaptive system sounds great in a sterile theoretical environment. Like, what happens when these systems actually start making high-stakes decisions in the real world?
That's where things get tricky.
Right. And this brings us to the third transformation in the framework, which is authority. The shift here is moving from autonomous action to accountable agency. We're instructed that we have to bind identity, permission, evidence, and stop conditions before we delegate tasks.
And this is arguably the most dangerous phase for any professional or organization right now, because you are giving a machine the authority to act on your behalf. And to navigate this, Liquidsio includes a mechanism called the red flag register.
Right, the red flag register. And there is one specific red flag that we need to spend some time on because it is incredibly counterintuitive. It's a risk called the persuasive error.
Oh, the persuasive error is huge.
It is. The red flag occurs during what they call agent-on-agent review. Mm-hmm. And the rule is agreement is not assurance. You're supposed to verify citations at the claim level, recalculate numbers deterministically, and retain evidence before taking any action.
It's a massive vulnerability. I mean, we are rapidly entering a workflow where you will have one AI agent proposing a course of action, say, drafting a strategy.
Right.
And then, just to save time, you use a second AI agent to check the first's work.
But hold on, let me challenge this. Having an AI check another AI exactly how we're supposed to scale this technology?
That's what people think, yeah.
Like, if I have a team of autonomous agents doing the work of 10 people, I can't humanly check every single cell of data they produce. Having an automated co-pilot check the automated pilot seems like the logical solution. If two separate, highly advanced AI agents look at a problem and they both agree on the solution, why isn't a green dashboard enough?
It's a really tempting trap, but the pilot analogy actually exposes the flaw.
How so?
Well, think about it. If an automated pilot and an automated co-pilot are pulling their navigational data from the exact same faulty sensor,
oh no,
they will confidently agree to fly the plane right into the side of a mountain.
Oh.
That's the core of the persuasive error. Large language models, even different brands of models, they often share underlying blind spots because they're trained on massive overlapping data sets from the internet.
Right. They're reading the same stuff.
Exactly. They scrape the same forums, the same wikis, the same flawed human logic. So when they generate a consensus, it is highly persuasive. The language they use is incredibly confident. The dashboard turns green, and it feels deeply reassuring to a busy human manager.
Because we are completely wired to trust consensus.
Yeah.
Like, if two smart entities agree, we just assume it's a fact.
Exactly. But agreement is not assurance. They could simply be experiencing a shared hallucination.
A shared hallucination. That's terrifying.
It really is. This is why you cannot rely on probabilistic generation to verify probabilistic generation. You have to inspect what the framework calls the evidence spine.
The evidence spine. So what does building an evidence spine look like practically? Because you mentioned recalculating numbers deterministically. What's the difference between that and what the AI does?
So when an AI generates a financial projection, it's often predicting the most likely sequence of tokens, you know, words and numbers, based on patterns. That is probabilistic.
Just guessing what sounds right.
Right. But deterministic math is using a calculator. 2 + 2 = 4, constrained by absolute rules. So to build an evidence spine, you must force the AI to cite its sources at the claim level.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, or a specialized deterministic program, must independently verify that the math is mathematically sound, not just linguistically plausible.
Okay, let's bring this down to earth for the listener with a 60-second governance test from the material. We can start small. Imagine you ask an AI to find a new software tool for your team. It recommends one, a second AI confirms it's a good fit, the dashboard is green, and it's $100 a month. Easy to cancel, low risk. You'd probably just click approve, right?
Sure, yeah. The reversibility is high, so the stakes are pretty low.
But the framework scales this up to a much more dangerous scenario. Imagine an autonomous procurement agent recommends a massive 3-year AI vendor contract. It writes up the 50-page proposal. A second AI agent reviews it and confirms the price matches policy, and the business case is solved.
Everything looks perfect.
Exactly. The dashboard is completely green. The commitment fits within your quarterly budget. But, this is the kicker, it is highly complex and very difficult to reverse once you sign it.
So you have machine consensus. The agents are perfectly aligned.
Yes, the machines are high-fiving each other. But human evidence is not independently checked. The reversibility is low. The test poses a very direct question. What authority do you grant in that exact moment? Can you resist a convincing machine?
And honestly, your answer to that question will define your career over the next decade. If you simply click approve because the system looks confident and the dashboard is green, you are abdicating your authority.
You're just handing it over.
Exactly. You're falling for the persuasive error. You haven't established accountable agency. You've just rubber stamped an autonomous action.
Because if the AI hallucinated the compliance requirements on page 40 of that contract and the company gets sued 6 months later, you can't just point to the procurement agent and say, well, the bot told me it was fine.
No one will care what the bot said. The accountability rests entirely, 100%, with the human who held the authority and failed to interrogate the evidence spine.
Which perfectly transitions us into the final piece of the puzzle here.
Yeah.
So you've mastered your attention by reinvesting your capacity. You've elevated your judgment by changing your altitude to focus on context. And you've learned to govern adaptive systems without falling for false consensus. What is the ultimate payoff for you?
Why do all this work, right?
Why do all this hard, friction-filled governance work. And this brings us to the fourth transformation, which is agency.
This is where we bridge the gap between organizational theory and your personal career survival. The shift here is moving from relying on static experience to building portable value.
Portable value. Mm-hmm. The idea is that you have to continuously convert your work into evidence, narrative, and professional options. Now, to actually execute this, Lecletio's lab operates across three distinct interconnected systems.
Right, the three OSs.
Yeah. First, there's the research division called the Human Systems Lab, which is where original publications and verifiable evidence come from. Second is capability, the growth studio, which functions as a safe space for experiments, simulations, and practical methods. And third is agency, the career operating system, which is powered by a tool called Resume to Builder.
It's a very elegant pipeline, honestly. You don't just read about a concept, you learn the theory and research. You practice it safely in capability, running simulations of complex governance scenarios. And then you monetize that new skill for yourself through the agency system.
I really want to focus on that how. Like, how does something like Resume to Builder actually convert static experience into portable value? In the past, a resume was just a list of things you produced, like I managed a team of five, or I delivered this marketing campaign, or even more recently, I used AI to generate code.
But saying I used AI to generate code is no longer a differentiator.
Because anyone can do it.
Exactly. The machine produces the raw output now. Anyone can prompt it. So portable value means your career currency has shifted. Your new resume needs to be a verified ledger of your accountable agency.
So instead of listing what you built, you list what you governed.
Exactly. Companies won't hire you for your output anymore. They will hire you for your track record of governance in complex environments.
Okay, that makes sense.
Your portable value is being able to say, I successfully managed a post-deployment learning system for a customer-facing AI. Or I prevented a flawed $500,000 contract by interrogating a machine's evidence spine and catching a persuasive error.
Right.
You're translating your judgment into a tangible, hireable asset.
And we really should establish Lecletio's credibility here, because this isn't just some academic pontificating from an ivory tower.
Not at all.
The framework makes a point to emphasize that these ideas are built from practice, not commentary, and they've been tested against consequence. He has over 25 years of technology and transformation leadership, specifically in complex programs and financial services.
And financial services is an environment where a hallucinated AI error doesn't just mean a typo. It means regulatory fines and millions of dollars lost.
Right. Real stakes. He has over $30 million in portfolio leadership, 7 canonical publications, and 3 live AI platforms that specifically focus on governance, project leadership, and risk systems. So when he warns you about the dangers of agent-on-agent review or stresses the need for post-deployment controls, he's speaking from the scars of actual enterprise implementation.
It grounds the entire framework. He knows exactly what happens when theoretical AI capabilities collide with the messy, high-stakes reality of a live business environment.
Okay, let's pull all of these threads together for you, the listener. We started by looking at a system that just helped you write emails a little faster, and we've ended up navigating a world where AI learns, decides, and takes action on its own.
It's a huge leap.
It is. The core message of the AI plus Creative Growth Lab is undeniable. AI has changed the speed of work, so you must change your altitude. You cannot just coast on the newly freed capacity. You have to actively reinvest it. You have to elevate your daily focus from competent output to stronger, more nuanced judgment.
And if your role involves managing projects or teams, you have to transition from delivering static code to governing adaptive living systems. You must demand independent deterministic assurance over machine consensus, always remembering that agreement is not assurance.
And finally, you have to package all that high-level governance into portable career value. You have to prove your agency. It is an incredible, actionable roadmap for navigating the disruption that is already here. But as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with one final implication to mull over on your own.
Oh, this is a good one.
Yeah. We spent this entire time talking about how you need to change your altitude and use your human judgment to govern the AI. But if your future value in the marketplace is entirely based on your track record of governing these complex systems,
which we just established it will be.
Right. What happens when an AI system is eventually designed to evaluate the quality of your governance?
That is a deeply unsettling but probably inevitable thought.
Will your future performance reviews be conducted by the very machines you were supposed to be governing in the first place? Like, how do you mathematically prove the nuance of your human judgment to an algorithmic judge? It is something to keep in the back of your mind the next time your dashboard flashes green and asks for your approval. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the AI Plus Creative Growth Lab. Keep questioning the consensus, deliberately reinvest your time, and we'll see you on the next one.